Hi, I'm Norm Shealy.
NormShealy.com.
You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight I have with us Dr. Jonathan Wright, and we're going to talk about his book, Why Stomach Acid is Good for You, and a lot of other things, because I found that Dr. Wright knows a whole lot more about alternative medicine than just about stomach acid. So hopefully he'll be willing to share some of that with us as well. Hello, Dr. Wright. How are you?
Well, I'm doing all right, Eva. Thank you for inviting me on your show.
Before we get started, can you tell us a little bit about you and how you came to do what you do and where you do it and where people can find you?
Let's see. After graduating from college, that happened to be Harvard University, where they taught me they know everything back there, went to University of Michigan Medical School, which is quite the conventional medical school. And they taught me what medical schools, even till this day, usually teach. Went into a residency program, as they're called, in family medicine, because I thought I wanted to be a family doctor. But in the course of that, a couple of folks came in who, as every doctor will tell you, were there to teach me something. Doctors get these kind of folks from time to time. One lady came in with a book, and it told her that vitamin E would cure a problem that she'd had for 7 years, and no patent medicine, which is a better way of saying the word drug, because they're all patented anyway, those drugs. No patent medicine would touch. And I told her, well, don't you see me about that? She says, yes, I did. FDA tells me I'm going to die from vitamin E if I take too much. I told her I knew that wouldn't happen. Go out and try it, you know. And she was kind enough, never did come back, but she was kind enough to call me back about 6 weeks later and tell me that her problem had totally cleared up. By the way, it was intense leg cramps that nothing would fix. Had totally cleared up within 3 weeks of starting vitamin E, and she flushed all her patent medicines down the toilet, and she just thought I'd like to know.
Now, that's interesting. I've never heard vitamin E being associated with leg cramps. What's the connection there?
Something about getting potassium across the cell membrane, I believe.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Yeah. And she got it from an Adele Davis book. You've heard of Adele Davis, of course. So I went out and got me a copy of that book. And she's one of the pioneering nutritionist folks. Not a physician, but really, really good at what she did with the diet and vitamins. I learned there was all kinds of stuff in there, because she put footnotes and references all over her books. I learned there was all kinds of stuff I'd never learned in medical school about the function of the body with the natural things that belong in the body. And that's when kind of a light bulb went on. Our bodies, according to one book over here, are from dust they come, and from dust to they shall return. They're all made out of the substance and energy of the planet Earth. So what the heck are we doing putting patent medicines in there? That's like trying to fix your Chevrolet with Toyota parts. It doesn't work too good. What we should do is fix human bodies with human body parts. And here I'm talking about the molecules, the little tiny molecules of vitamins and minerals and proteins and essential fatty acids and the energies that go in the body. So I started studying that real hard, and I'll shut up in just a second after saying that a partner of mine and I have now collected, between the on-paper and the electronic files, about 70,000 to 75,000 citations. And I don't mean just the citation, I mean the entire medical publication on how to affect health and prevent disease with diet, vitamins, minerals, and natural energies.
You don't have to twist my arm to make me believe you.
Oh,
that's
good.
What my show's all about. I mean, in my family, we don't see allopathic doctors unless we break a bone and we have to go and have pins or screws or something put in, you know. So I was so happy to run across your site. So let's talk about this book first, and then we'll go into some of the other things that you know. And I'm just kind of, it's such an easy book to follow. I'm just kind of going to go through it as you have it. So we're going to talk about stomach acid, and first I want to talk about the gray man. I found that a very interesting story.
And totally true, too. And that's just how he looked when he came on in, just sort of a gray pallor to his skin, and he was all out of energy, as it says there. And he'd been a number of places trying to figure out what was going on, and it had not been figured out yet. Turned out that like happens to many of us inevitably with time, and to some of us for other reasons, his stomach had practically ceased working, and the stomach's job, its work, is to make hydrochloric acid and an enzyme called pepsin, and to digest things with the acid-activated enzyme and break them all into tiny pieces so that they can get into our bodies. They can't get into our bodies whole, of course. And his stomach had quit doing that. So even though he was eating food and thought he was doing a good job of that, why, he was really, really deficient in a large number of amino acids and vitamins and minerals. And in his particular case, his skin developed a slightly gray tone. But most people don't get that. They do get the fatigue, though, that goes with it.
So why was he gray? Was he not oxygenated, or what was it?
That was probably part of it. I didn't spend much time trying to figure out why he was gray. What I did try to figure out was why he was just feeling so down and out, because I figured if we corrected that, the grayness would go away.
Uh-huh.
And it did. And it turned out, as I say, he had hardly any acid in his stomach. Couldn't digest breakfast, lunch, and dinner proper.
Because I see people like that occasionally, and I've always wondered, you know. Anyway, so the reason that I called you on is because, for whatever reason, a lot of people with reflux have crossed my path recently. And, of course, the first thing they think to do is to take some kind of acid suppressor or some Tums or some Relays or something. So I'd like for you to tell us why we don't want to do that and what's really going on.
We really, really, really don't want to take those acid shutter offers, the Prilosec and, I've forgotten the names of all of them. But anyway, the patent medicines that you get from the doctor that block out your stomach acid totally. And taking the ones that buffer the acid, that's the Rolaids and the Tums, is not that much better. It's a tiny bit better, but not that much. Both of them are pretty terrible because what we're literally doing is giving ourselves malnutrition the longer we take those things. And that book was published 2001, and since that time, it's still in print. A lot of people are discovering it because they're not liking the way they're feeling after a while on antacids and acid blockers. But since that time, there have been more and more and more studies published. Here was one in the AMA Journal just last week where they gave a bunch of kids with asthma acid blockers because those kids get a lot of acid reflux. And they found it not only didn't do their asthma any good, but actually the kids who took the acid blockers had more colds and flu by far than the ones who took the placebo. It actually causes trouble. Taking those acid blockers, you can get osteoporosis easier. You can get some pretty bad infections in the gut, because one of the functions of hydrochloric acid in the stomach is to kill germs that get in accidentally, maybe in the food, maybe somehow. But they're just killed by acid, and if there's any acid, or if you shut it off, you can get an easy gut infection. You get osteoporosis. There's some suspicion you might get early Alzheimer's. There's a lot of proof that people get pneumonia easier. There's a lot of diseases people get easier if they got malnutrition. I won't go on and on here. But we really don't want to do that, especially when the cause of the problem is not having too much acid in our stomach. Now, every time I see somebody who's been prescribed one of those things, and it's got to be somebody at least a couple times a month, I'll ask them, did the doctor actually test your stomach to find out how much acid it's making? And this year is 2012, and I've been asking that question since 1976 when we got the stomach acid testing equipment in from Germany. And nobody has ever said yes. All of them look at me and say, what test? I just had these symptoms. It's obviously acid coming up, so they block my acid. And it never does get tested. So we test people who've got reflux, and the large majority of them don't have enough acid in their stomach. It's the darndest thing. And I tell them, you should take this hydrochloric acid Pepsin pill. It's available in all the health food stores. And take it with meals. And actually, some people need just one or two with meals. Some people need five or six with meals. Depends on how bad off their stomach is. And they'd say, what? I got this acid reflux. You're asking me to take hydrochloric acid? And I'd say, yeah, just in case you're worried, keep some bicarb handy and put out the fire if it gives you a problem. And people come back and say, it's the darndest thing. Taking hydrochloric acid, it shut off my acid reflux.
So what exactly is the root cause? Why does it stop making?
Why does it stop making acid in the stomach? Well, for one, it's something that comes with time. Now, back in the 1930s, some researchers at the Mayo Clinic actually did stomach acid testing on people at every decade of life except for children under 10. But they did teenagers in the 20s and 30s and all the way up to 80s. And what they found was a gradual increase in the occurrence of low stomach acid, so that by the time we all got to be 60, half of us don't have enough acid down there to totally digest everything. That's not a surprise. Hey, I'm over 60. I can't run as fast as when I was 20. I need some reading glasses. Things do slow down with time, and why anybody would be foolish enough to believe that uniquely stomachs start functioning more and more and more as we get older, that's kind of silly, isn't it? It slows down all the time like everything. So that's one of the major reasons of time. But there's other things that will do it to us. Researchers down in one of the universities in Texas were checking some of their graduate students who'll do anything legal for money about how much acid their stomachs made. And these were young people in their 20s, and all of them were pretty normal. And then here comes this flu through the campus. And everybody got the flu, it seems, including all of their experimental people. And after they got over the acute flu, they came back, got their stomach pumped once again because, you know, they're being paid once a week to do this. And damn, a bunch of them didn't have any acid down there. It seems the flu wiped it out. And some of the medical journals from the 1920s showed that the common infections of childhood will wipe out your stomach acid. There's another thing that will do it to you, too. If you got a real bad case of certain food allergies, it creates what's called allergic gastritis, and the stomach gets all inflamed. Now, most people recover from the allergic gastritis or the flu or the other infection, but there's a few who don't, and they just keep on having low stomach acid. And the two groups of children that have the most low stomach acid problem are the asthmatic kids, and there must be, I'm not kidding, it's so silly, there must be about 20 experiments published on giving asthmatic kids acid blockers, and in not one of them did their asthma get better, but they keep doing it because they get reflux. Asthmatic kids, back in the 1930s, and Dr. George Bray in 1931 and Dr. Marjorie Gillespie in 1935, they both showed that over 80% of asthmatic kids don't have enough acid down there. And the next biggest category is the kids who have the bad cases of eczema, the skin condition where it's behind the knees, front of the elbows, itches and scratches and that kind of stuff, and it's really bad. And if a kid's got eczema and they're a teenager, they got low stomach acid till proven otherwise. And those two categories, it's induced by allergy or infection, one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Now, alcohol will do this to you too, folks. If you drink too much alcohol, especially if you're doing it on an empty stomach without a lot of food around, it can just erode away at that stomach acid, lining.
So well, is something wrong with the pancreas to make this happen, or is something...
No. Not as far as anybody knows, no.
What is why do we not have it? Is it going somewhere? Is it not making?
It's not making it. The cells that line the stomach are supposed to make hydrochloric acid, and they're supposed to make pepsin. And those cells, I'm sorry, have just been destroyed in the people who have this long-term.
Uh-huh.
Now, they're just damaged in the flu cases and some of the allergy cases, and they grow themselves back. But in some cases, they don't grow themselves back. It's the lining cells of the stomach have been damaged, and that's entirely happening within the stomach. Now, around the world, there's another big cause. It doesn't occur so often in this country. Around the world, according to the World Health Organization, one in three water supplies out there around the world is infected with a bacteria called Helicobacter. We've heard about it in this country because when it really gets bad, it gives us ulcers. But before it ever gets you an ulcer, it's been eating away at the stomach lining for years. And there goes the acid production capability. And I should mention one other one, and then I'll shut up again. And that's so-called autoimmune disease. A large proportion of people with autoimmune disease don't have enough acid down there.
Well, that makes me ask the question, one of the holistic doctors, I'm not going to mention his name, but you'd probably know him, told me that many, many people have Helicobacter and that they just don't realize it, and that they ultimately manifest congestive heart failure and other kinds of problems like that. And he said, if you'll take five Rolaids three times a day for 5 days, not any longer than that, that whatever it is that's in that Rolaid will kill that Helicobacter. Do you know anything about that?
No, I hadn't seen that one yet, and that's real interesting that that might happen, but I have not seen anything published on it. The couple of things that have been published on it happen to be, one of them's rhubarb, of all things, and there's a rhubarb extract in some of the health food stores that kills Helicobacter.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is something called mastic, which is taken from the gum of a tree related to pistachio tree. It's also used in dentistry. It sticks things together, but it sure does kill Helicobacter.
Interesting. Well, I'll tell you who it was. It was Norm Shealy. He's the one that told me that.
Yeah.
Norm, and I believe, you know, Norm knows a lot, so I kind of believed him. So my next question is, I would imagine if food allergies plays a huge role in it, that genetically modified foods probably, I was just thinking the whole time you were talking about that, corn, and how terrible my stomach feels whenever I eat corn. So would that have anything to do with all these problems, you think?
I've read both of Jeff Smith's books, and I can't find anything in there that says the GMOs directly cause low stomach acid. I wouldn't be surprised, but I don't think anybody's researched it yet. Sure enough, especially in experimental animals, as you know just as well as I, causes all kinds of intestinal damage, but nobody mm-hmm. specifically studied the stomach acid issue.
Can people become, for lack of a better word, addicted to these acid blockers?
Well, sort of, because if they have a bad case of reflux, every time they stop, here comes the reflux again, once the stomach acid turns on. So that'll sort of get you addicted if you're relieving pain with it, but otherwise not, no.
Okay. So I kind of thought for some reason that it caused like a vicious cycle to go on, you know.
Not that I know of, other than
that you take it and then it makes more acid come and you have worse problems, and it just makes a big round circle of problems with it. My next question that I wanted to ask you is, what is the relationship to B12?
Well, those same cells that are supposed to make the hydrochloric acid when they're working right and are supposed to make the enzyme pepsin when they're working right are supposed to make a third thing. Now, it's named intrinsic factor. I didn't do the naming. If I'd done the naming, I would have called it vitamin B12 absorption factor, because that's what it does. It comes on out, and it grabs onto that B12, and it will not let go. And it's sort of like a handle dangling off the B12. And it has to be there, otherwise the place where B12 gets absorbed, which is way down the small intestines at the very end, called the terminal ileum, why, that has to grab onto the handle to bring the B12 into the body. For whatever reason, it does not grab the B12 itself. It grabs that little handle and pulls it mm-hmm. into the body. So without those little handles called intrinsic factor being manufactured by the stomach cells, B12 can't be absorbed worth diddly darn. And that's one of the first things that people with low stomach acid need is a bunch of B12 shots, which fortunately are inexpensive and they can give them to themselves so they don't have to pay the doctor for it unless they feel like it.
What kind of symptoms do you see if that's going on?
Well, ma'am, I'm coming out with a book on childhood asthma, and one of the big symptoms I see is called wheezing. We can almost always tell parents, I'll take that back, say it right, that your child will not be wheezing, and within 30 days, mom and dad, if you give your kid a B12 shot every day for the next 30 days,
really?
And that's 50% of those kids, and the wheezing's just gone, and another 30%, it makes a major dent in the wheezing, leaves us only 10-20% who don't get touched. And that book, we're starting to work on it now. Oh, should be out within, by the end of the year. That's one of the really big ones for children, is the wheezing goes. Now, I didn't say that the whole problem is cured, because remember, all we did is get the B12 into the body. We didn't mm-hmm. get into calcium and the magnesium and the protein and all the other things that the stomach needs to get in. But at least we got rid of the wheezing. That's a big deal, isn't it?
Yeah, sure it is. So one other thing I found very interesting in your book, simply because I have people that suffer this in my family, is severe depression, and one of the ways that I've been treating my family members is with essential amino acids. And so when I saw your book and read that, because of stomach acid, the particles aren't broken down, and so you're not being able to absorb those. I was amazed, and it made so much sense to me. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yep, it's the protein that isn't being broken down, and building blocks of protein are just called amino acids. So whenever I'm working with anybody with depression, we always check their blood for amino acids. There's 8 essential amino acids, and much more often than not, depressed people are low in anywhere from 2 or 3 to all 8 of those essential amino acids. Now, when we remember that amino acids not only go, once they get into our bodies, go back to building human protein. That's why we don't like look like chickens when we eat chicken all the time, because it's broken down from chicken and built up to human. But those amino acids are the precursors of what are called neurotransmitters, which are the little molecules that carry messages back and forth between nerve cells. And practically every single blinking one of those antidepressant medications out there is said to work on your neurotransmitters. And, of course, I'm thinking, well, what the heck do we need a patent medicine for that? Nature knows how to work on neurotransmitters. Just give them more of the right kind of amino acids. And
I totally agree.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, my daughter, something happened to her, and she got raped, and she started using street drugs and started cutting. And, of course, the first thing the hospital did was put her on about, I'm not kidding, 12 different medications, strong medications that made her worse symptoms than she already had. And we started treating her with amino acids and with probiotics, and it's only been about 8 months and she's completely cured. She's not patched. She's cured. It's been an amazing, amazing journey watching that happen. But now it tells me that I ought to, because I know she gets bloating, so that tells me that she probably has something going on with her acid too, I bet.
If she gets bloating in the upper part of the abdomen above the navel, the bloating almost always is coming from the stomach, and stomach shouldn't bloat. So you're likely right on. She probably has low stomach acid at this point. Now, I have also seen it develop because of severe emotional trauma, where the stomach acid will disappear. Well, that makes sense. The brain and the body is connected. And one of the major nerves from the brain goes straight on down to the stomach and the rest of the intestines, called the vagus nerve. And I wouldn't be surprised if it could get affected when we have had an emotional trauma. Not only am I not surprised, but I do see it happen.
Does betaine, you know, beets help that, help your stomach acid?
Not too much. The reason that betaine is used is that it binds with the hydrochloric acid, and so it becomes a powder instead of a liquid, and that way it can be put in capsules, and when it gets wet in the stomach, the betaine releases the hydrochloric acid. Now, betaine, a natural molecule, as you just said, found in beets, is good for a lot of things. Another name for betaine is trimethylglycine, and those things called methyls, which are just one carbon and three hydrogens, those things called methyls, or methyl groups, depending on who's talking, are really useful to the body for a whole lot of things. For example, methyl groups attach onto estrogens and help you keep from getting cancer. No kidding. One of the major anti-cancer estrogens. It's a real powerful one. Is something called 2-methoxyestradiol, and notice the methyl in there, methoxy. And then, when we're getting all excited with adrenaline and stuff, methyl groups are really needed to make those adrenaline-like molecules. So, anyway, the betaine has a lot of uses, but by itself, it doesn't help digest lunch. It has to have the hydrochloric acid attached to it.
So you would have to take betaine and hydrochloric acid.
Well, it's all in the same capsule. It's called betaine hydrochloride.
Oh, okay.
All the health stores have it, every bit of it, every one of them.
What if you just juice the beets? Will you get the, you won't get the same results?
No, you won't.
Okay.
Now, I have to say, though, that there was a book real popular in the early part of the 20th century called Vermont Folk Medicine. You probably heard of that one. And the doc who wrote that, he was a fan of having people take apple cider vinegar. Remember, he's from Vermont, and all the apple cider. and stir a couple tablespoons in water and sip it down with meals if they had acid reflux, because a lot of times it made the acid reflux disappear. Well, yeah, but the acid in cider vinegar, as much as it helped relieve the pain, is called acetic acid, and that's totally different from hydrochloric acid, and it does not digest things as well.
Okay. So what would be the role with enzymes and acid? Do they help or not?
Well, remember that pepsin that the stomach is supposed to make is an enzyme. It's an enzyme made by the stomach, and actually the majority of the digestive enzymes, as you know, are made in the pancreas, and those ones, they like to function in an alkaline environment. So if we need the betaine hydrochloride, and we need it bad, and we don't use it, and we use the pancreatic enzymes instead, they will digest things, but they're not going to give us the very same effect on digestion as if we took the hydrochloric acid pepsin with the meal. And then if a person needs the digestive enzymes from the pancreas because their pancreas isn't working too, which happens sometimes, but doesn't happen every time, that's for sure, then we have them take the digestive enzymes after meals because that's the way nature does it. The food goes down the stomach, and there's this thing called the acid phase of digestion with betaine hydrochloride and the acid enzyme pepsin. And then it goes out of the stomach and down past the pancreas, and here comes all of these pancreatic enzymes and a bunch of bicarb. Yeah, that's right. Pancreas makes bicarb, just like bicarbonate of soda. And that's real alkaline. And that's the alkaline phase of digestion. And somebody up here at one of the wood processing plants says, hey, that's how we digest timber to make paper. There's an acid phase and an alkaline phase. Well, yeah. Just copying nature there.
Interesting. So, could you explain the role of alkalinity and acidity in stomach acid?
All right. Well, the big role with stomach acid is the acidity. Let's see. Your car battery is just a little bit more acid than fully digested food. No kidding. If you put a finger down in your stomach and you could stand the pain, if your stomach was normally making acid, and you could stand the pain for an hour, well, you'd just pull out some bone, that's about it. That's totally acid. For those who are into chemistry, the pH gets down to 2, and the blood pH and the tissue pH is around 7, and the difference between 2 and 7 is not 5, it's 10 to the 5th power for those who do math. That's a bunch of difference. So then after it escapes from the stomach, where you see that valve at the end of the stomach that lets the food out, not the one that lets it in, but the one that lets it out, is acid sensitive. And when the acid gets down to 2, then it opens up and lets the food pass through into the intestines. And then is when it becomes acid, when the pancreas pours all this bicarb all over it and neutralizes the acid. And here comes the pancreas enzymes, and they have interesting names like amylase and lipase and protease and other aces, and all that ace means is something from the Greek for digestion. And it does the rest of the digestion on the food. So there has to be, for optimal, there has to be an acid phase of digestion and then this alkaline phase, and they are separate. They're conducted in separate places even.
So you mentioned earlier about those leg cramps. People that have... I'm assuming that leg cramps typically have something to do with mineral imbalances.
You're absolutely correct, ma'am. It's usually calcium, magnesium, potassium, those things. And like I mentioned, down set, very rarely it's vitamin E, but usually it's calcium, magnesium, potassium. But if somebody is, let's say they're 45, 50 years of age or older, and they come in, happening to mention they got leg cramps, I tell them, you need a stomach acid test. What do I need a stomach acid test for? Well, most of us, we're digesting our food good enough. We're getting enough minerals out of the food that we don't get leg cramps. But those two minerals, calcium and magnesium, they absolutely have to have hydrochloric acid to be separated out from the food. The potassium doesn't so much. So if your stomach isn't working too good, you're not going to get the calcium magnesium out. One of the first things you're going to happen there is you're going to get leg cramps from it. Oh, leg cramps mean my stomach isn't working. Uh-huh. Especially if you're 45, 50 and older. And if that's the case, then you put the hydrochloric acid in and start digesting the food, and leg cramps gradually fade away, but you can make it go even quicker by taking some extra minerals for a while.
So is it muscles that are cramping?
Yes, it's the muscles that are cramping in the legs.
So if the muscles are cramping in your legs, the muscles must be cramping in other places like your heart.
Could be.
So could this help heart disease?
No, I don't think it makes that much difference to the heart disease.
Are people that have palpitations and things?
Well, now there, that's a different story. That's the electrical activity, and the electrical activity of the heart can be made better by magnesium, which is one of the ones that's infected by affected by stomach acid. It can also be improved with manganese and selenium and copper, those four minerals, magnesium, selenium, copper. And if our stomachs aren't working, we don't get enough of those, and so we're likely to, well, more likely to have a rhythm problem, but I'm not going to tell you it's the cause of every rhythm problem. It's the cause of some rhythm problems.
Okay, so the next question I'd like to ask is about, I looked around on the internet at some of your other work, and you one thing you talk about is impotency and testosterone. Is there a connection there?
With the stomach acid problem?
Yes.
Well, yeah, could be. Now, again,
Many men have that. I mean, I'm sure if you could give them one other place to look besides the pharmaceutical, they would probably jump up and down.
Well, the main mineral involved in production of testosterone, I'm sorry, I'll take that back. There's two main minerals involved in the production of testosterone. One of them is zinc, and that directly works in the testicles to help a guy's body make testosterone. And the other one is manganese, and that works by stimulating the pituitary gland to make the hormone that stimulates the testicles to make testosterone. So one of them works, as they say in the medical world, peripherally in the testicles. The other one works centrally up there in the brain, but they both help us to make more testosterone. Now, that's saying, though, that low testosterone in some men's cases is the reason for not doing so well with the erectile function.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it is one of the reasons, but there certainly are other reasons, too. And I know you've read one of the biggies happens to be lack of blood flow, and guys who are getting arteriosclerotic disease, just that lack of blood flow will lead to the trouble. And what has to be done there is not just make more testosterone in case they need more, make more testosterone, but get the blood flow going better. And I think a lot of guys have heard that something called L-arginine, which is an amino acid, helps our bodies to dilate the blood vessels and get more blood flow all over the body, not just to that relevant organ for us guys, but also it's been tested in congestive heart failure and found to make congestive heart failure significantly better. So one can use L-arginine, one can use something called L-citrulline, which works even better. But those raise testosterone, they dilate blood vessels.
I have a question about that L-arginine. You know, if people have herpes, as it causes them to have herpes breakout. So do you balance it with lysine, or does this citrulline just do a better, is it a different form of it or something to work better without causing that breakout?
Well, that infinite consciousness is paying off for you. You do have to balance it with lysine, no question. Because some of us, and by the way, let's say we've got 100 guys who've had herpes one time or another, and they all go take L-arginine or L-citrulline, which, by the way, is just a more efficient way of the body manufacturing targeted L-arginine.
Will it do the same thing? Will it cause a breakout?
Yep, it might. So what one does is to remember that those repeat breakouts don't happen in 100 out of 100 guys. They happen in maybe 10 out of 100 guys. The other 90, who knows why it doesn't do it, and it doesn't know it's 10 over there, but that's the way it goes. So the ones who do break out, they just go down the store, get some L-lysine. Nature's always got balances here and there, and the arginine not only produces viral reproduction, arginine produces sperm reproduction, so it gets all kinds of life forms to break out, whereas the lysine does the opposite. It kind of puts the virus to sleep. So a guy takes more lysine than arginine, and he won't break out anymore in the large, large majority of cases.
Do you take them together, or do you take them separately? I mean, do you take the arginine and let it work, and then an hour later take the lysine, or do you take them at the same time?
If you're in a big hurry, you can take them all at the same time, and if you just take a little bit more of each, it'll work as good as taking a little less separately.
Okay. So do you take a little bit more? Let's say you take 500 milligrams of arginine. Do you take 600 milligrams of lysine, or would you take equal dosages?
No, you'd have to go a little bit higher just to be sure.
Okay.
So, like you say, 500 to 600. But most of the time, if guys want to get the blood flow effect out of L-arginine, they need at least 3 grams, which is 3,000 milligrams. So I'll tell them, well, you better go to 3.5 or 4 grams of lysine at the same time.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit about macular degeneration and vision? I had no idea that being able to digest your food would affect your vision, even though now that I've read your book, it makes perfect sense.
That's absolutely so. We have been working with people with dry macular degeneration. We want to be real clear now. The dry type is the type where the back of the eye just deteriorates like an old barn that didn't get any maintenance, whereas the so-called wet type is where blood vessels start growing extra across the back of the eye, and that's like a vines covering that barn. So they're two different types, but the dry eye is better than 95% of all macular degeneration. And keep in mind that one of the places in the body that has the most so-called oxidative damage is the going to it, it has to be repaired all the time, is the visual apparatus. We're always looking at stuff, the light's always coming in, and that light causes oxidative changes and so forth, and then the body repairs it so we can keep seeing. But if we run out of resupply materials to fix the back of the eye, which our bodies are having to do every day, then all it can do is deteriorate. So starting in 1986, we lost count, actually, but when we were counting, we found out that we can get 70% of all those people with dry macular degeneration, we can get the problem stopped, totally stopped, doesn't get any worse. And in the majority of that 70%, which is, better than 50% of the 70%, they can actually get visual improvement and recover some of their vision if we make up... Hello?
I'm listening.
Oh, I'm sorry. Something beeped at me. My fault. If we make up for what the stomach hasn't been getting in for the last few years, so what we do to get the job done is to put it all in by IV. And for a while, before our state...
The stomach put a pepsin in by IV or what?
No. All the nutrients that the back of the eye needs to repair itself.
Okay.
And we put those all in by IV. At the same time, oh, remember, a person comes in and says, I got dry macular degeneration. We will run the stomach acid test, and about 7, 8 out of 10 have got low stomach acid. And we'll also run a test for hidden gluten sensitivity, and another one or two about hidden gluten sensitivity, and that does just as bad as low stomach acid at keeping things out of the body. In that case, hidden gluten sensitivity has got nothing to do with digestion. It's got to do with absorption. So stuff can digest just 100% perfect, but it can't be absorbed. And that's the same effect anyway. So that's what we find out people got. And for a while, before the state people told us not to, we actually had a money-back guarantee that if people came into our clinic with dry macular degeneration and they just kept getting worse, we'd give them all their money back.
So what nutrient is that, like kind of like a Myers cocktail or something?
Oh, it's a whole bunch of nutrients, ma'am. Just everything that we can think of that's been put in the medical journal someplace is helping the back of the eye. So it's a really long list. And we put it in all by IV, but we can't have people, of course, taking IVs for the rest of their lives. So at the same time, we have people who have the low stomach acid start on hydrochloric acid pepsin with meals. And there's a formula that Dr. Alan Gabe and I put together called Octagon.
Oh, I just got his book. What an amazing new book.
Oh, isn't that amazing?
Yeah,
that's a terrific book. 14,000 citations.
Yeah, he's coming on in a couple of weeks to talk about that book.
Yay. Good for you. I don't know if infinite consciousness can be expanded, but if there's one book that can do it, it's Dr. Gabe's book. There you go.
That's good. It's a good one.
So, anyway, we put together a formula called Ocudyne, O-C-U-D-Y-N-E, and that's got every one of these nutrients that's needed in it, and so we have people correct their digestion, so it's working better. Some people do need digestive enzymes, too. Some don't. We have them learned to give themselves a B12 shot, because remember, the betaine hydrochloride with pepsin it still doesn't get the B12 in. So we have people learn to give themselves B12 shots of folinic acid and eat right, talk to our nutritionist, and take your Ocudyne stuff. And what do you know? They never need another series of IV again, and they can go back to Tennessee or wherever they're from and keep their vision. It's terrific.
Excellent. My vision's dropping, and I hate it. Makes me feel handicapped, you know?
I know. That might be the just getting 40 needing reading glasses type of thing.
Though. Getting 40? How about 52?
Oh, okay. Well, you did a little better than most.
So do you sell this product, or is it, what is it?
It's in all the natural food stores.
Okay.
It's called Ocudyne.
Okay. Now, if you could talk a little bit about fungus. And I'm really kind of thinking about, I'm looking at your chapter that said stomach acid prevents bacterial and fungal overgrowth.
Sure
now,
does.
Mold is a fungus. And so many people have mold in all these buildings, you know, sick building syndromes. Would it help that? That
well,
kind of mold?
If somehow they swallowed some of that mold in the building, from the building, I should say, if they have normal stomach acid, it'll just be destroyed. If
mm-hmm.
they don't have normal stomach acid, if it's real weak, the mold will pass through and set up a happy home in the guts, and that's not
mm-hmm.
too good for us.
So if you start taking this, putting acid in your stomach, will it help the mold symptoms, but will it help kill the mold?
Well, it'll help kill the mold that's in the stomach, and it will do what's called inhibiting the mold, which means interfering with its growth further down the gut. Imagine, there's all this acid being pulled out of the bloodstream and dumped into the stomach. That's where the stomach gets it in the first place, is from the bloodstream.
Mm-hmm.
And dumped into the stomach so the pH gets down to just about as low as a car battery acid, and then that's passed on down the gut. Okay, so if that isn't happening, then the gut is going to be even more alkaline than it usually is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that encourages the growth of mold. So if we put back the acid, at least we're going to discourage the growth of that mold. If it happened to get past the stomach, we're going to discourage it as much as it's discouraged in your average four-year-old who's got normal stomach acid.
Could you discuss the role of zinc in stomach acid? I find
zinc
very interesting. You know,
zinc is one of the things that's supposed to help the stomach make acid, but I have not seen it do that all by itself in people with a real low stomach acid. If they start swallowing zinc, their stomachs don't turn back on. In fact, nobody so far has figured out how to turn the stomach acid back on when it's really badly off. Now, in the minor to medium cases, sometimes you get rid of the alcohol, you get rid of the allergies, you get rid of caffeine, which does it to some people. You get rid of the after effects of the flu, and the stomach acid will come back. Worked with a couple people who were real intense meditators who brought their stomach acid back with meditation.
Mm-hmm.
But the older we get, the less likely it is to come back on its own or with the help of zinc. Getting back to zinc. Yes, zinc is involved in the production of hydrochloric acid, but I've not seen it be a major factor in turning it back on once it's been shut off.
Now, when you supplement it with hydrochloric acid, will it eventually turn back on? When you feed it for a while and nurture it and tend to it, does it eventually come back on, or is this something we got to do for the rest of our lives?
Some people have to do it the rest of their lives. Some people it comes back, especially when it was caused, as I mentioned, especially when it was caused by allergies or it was caused by alcohol.
Okay. Could you talk a little bit about, and this is something I experienced recently, I got a really bad pain right below my right rib, and so I did the gall. I got to the point where I was either going to go to the ER, which I won't do, and or do something. So I did the gallbladder cleanse, and I flushed out, don't fall out of your chair, 2.5 quarts of gallstones.
I won't fall out of my chair. Somebody actually brought that many in, and some mason jars is what I'm looking for.
Yeah, it was 2.5 quarts of mason jars.
Oh, there you go.
So what's that connection, if any?
Well, over in Denmark, some researchers got a whole bunch of people together, one at a time, of course, who were having gallbladder attacks, and they measured their stomach acid, and they found that 60% of them had low acid in the stomach. Now, probably not a surprise, because the spasm in the gallbladder that leads to the pain, it's not the stone that leads to the pain, ma'am. In the large majority of the cases, it's not, and that's just not me talking. That comes from the chair of the Food Allergy Committee of the American College of Allergists, mm-hmm. Dr. James Brenneman, who published research in the 1970s showing that 99.9% of gallbladder attacks are caused by allergic spasm. No kidding. Food allergy. And since food allergy can also cause low stomach acid, not a big surprise if there's 60% overlap. When we're working with people with who keep having gallbladder attacks, we just run some allergy tests, tell them, please don't eat that. You know what?
It makes perfect sense.
And the gallbladder attacks just go away, stones or no stones.
So does the stomach acid have anything at all to do with bile or bile conjugates or cholesterol or anything like that?
Well, here's what it's got to do with bile. It's really indirect. It turns out that when that acid gets down to 2 and it triggers the opening of the end valve in the stomach and out it goes in the intestine, that very acid, when it hits the inside wall of the intestine, that upper intestine is called the duodenum, triggers the release of 2 hormones known and probably more. And one of those hormones, somebody named it CCK, I won't go into what that stands for, but that hormone that's released from the duodenal wall by the stomach acid, it travels right on over to the gallbladder and says, your turn, and the gallbladder squeezes and out comes the bile.
Okay.
So it's a nice little domino effect. The acid causes the gallbladder to squeeze out bile, and that flows to meet the enzymes and bicarb coming from the pancreas, and the whole mess is dumped on lunch.
Okay. That's very interesting. I'm learning a lot. I had no idea that gallbladder did so much. One thing I thought interesting was the rosacea. A lot of people, you know, I interview about a lot of alternative medicine things, and what I'm seeing here is a lot of connections with cholesterol and heart and autoimmune and allergies and all kind of things that have to do with absorption in your stomach. I can just see this huge picture, and so now I'm seeing rosacea, which many people who have heart disease or artery disease have that thing.
You bet they do.
How does stomach acid affect that?
We have in our files, I should say, an article from 1948 from a dermatology journal, and it was an editorial. And it said, as every dermatologist knows, people with rosacea have low stomach acid. That was 1948, and they said that every dermatologist knew it back then. Well, I don't know why they all forgot, got me. But they must have, because
so funny.
When somebody comes in with rosacea, we check their stomach acid, bingo, another one with no stomach acid, or low stomach acid, I should say, and we'll have them take the hydrochloric acid and pepsin with meals, and what do you know, the rosacea slowly clears up. It takes a few months, but it's usually either totally gone or almost gone. There's an exception to that. If we neglect to check those people for that little Helicobacter thing, because more people than you'd want have, with rosacea, have the Helicobacter as the cause of their low stomach acid, then they don't get better that fast until we do something to wipe out the Helicobacter. And that, remember, is the rhubarb or the mastic.
Okay. Let me write that down. I don't want to forget it. That's important. Now, is there anything you've got about 10 minutes that you would like to talk about that we haven't already talked about?
Well, thank you very much. That's kind of you. What we've been going over so far has mostly got to do with function of the body, diet, vitamins, minerals, different conditions that are affected by vitamins, minerals, food allergies. And indeed, I do a lot of that, but there's another area that another individual came in to teach me about in the early 1980s, and that's called bioidentical hormones. And all that means is replacing your hormones with the exact molecular copies of the hormones we had when we were younger. Well, what this lady did was come in and tell me that she's going through menopause and she's having all these hot flashes and depression and crying spells and she just wants to get over it. Will I give her some natural hormones, please? So I started writing a prescription, and as I keep telling folks, she must have been a school teacher because she could read upside down, and she stopped me halfway through and says, that's a prescription for that Permarin stuff, isn't it? I said, yeah. She says, I want natural hormones. Well, I didn't want to insult her and tell her that horses were natural, but she trumped me. She says, "Do I look like a horse?"
Yeah, I kind of have a problem with that, too. It's from a different species, and I don't want to force his hormone directing my heart or my lungs or my
gut. And sometimes that's okay. For example, in all species, at least of larger animals, thyroid hormone is exactly the same in all of them, so that's bioidentical. But estrogens? No way. Horses have estrogens called equilins, named after horses, of course, which do not occur in humans. And those are quite carcinogenic in humans, excuse us.
Mm-hmm.
So she didn't want that. She had better sense. But I told her that, look, with the exception of this single estrogen over here, the rest of the hormones in the menstrual cycle aren't on the market. And she says, "Get this now. I'm sure you can do something about that, sir." Kind of sounds like
smart
some people's wives, you know. And I'll be back in a couple of months, and let's see what you got for me. So I got busy calling compounding pharmacies. Finally found Ed Thorpe, who's head of Cripps Pharmacy in Vancouver, British Columbia. Couldn't even find it in the United States at that time. You can find it all over the place now. And he sourced all the different hormones of the menstrual cycle, the major estrogens, the progesterone, the DHEA, a little bit of testosterone for the ladies and a lot for the guys. And so I actually managed to put together the very first program of bioidentical hormone replacement in the whole United States in the early 1980s, which doesn't make me so wonderful because the same darn thing was done over in China in the year 1050. And that story, which is true, absolutely true.
So I have a question for you.
Yeah, let me...
I'm sorry, did I cut you off?
Well, I was just going to say, all that's in a book that came out a couple years ago, which the publisher named Stay Young and Sexy with Bioidentical Hormones.
That Jay Mead.
And we put under that The Science Explained, because we explain the science, my co-author and me, in simple English, not in scientese. Well, as you know, that's become real, real popular since Suzanne Somers got her books going.
Mm-hmm.
And seems I've been doing it the longest and the mostest, so people ask me to go teach seminars and all of that, and now I'll shut up. Thank you very much.
You're so funny. I recently, last month, as a matter of fact, started having hot flashes for the first time in my life. So I'm fortunate. I live up in the Appalachians, and there's not many people around here that think like I do. But I did find this one wonderful orthopedist who happens to be open-minded, and he gave me something called Estrovera, and it fixed it. Within 3 days, I had no more hot flashes, but I was surprised at the ingredient. Rhubarb. Have you ever heard of that? Rhubarb doing that?
Yes, and there's a number of other botanicals that will do it, too. My favorite one is one from Thailand, of all places, that not only helps thick hot flashes, but it also is the same herb that's used widely in the cooking over in that area of Thailand where they have the lowest, one of the lowest rates, I should say, of both prostate and breast cancer in the whole world.
Uh-huh.
It's called, it's got a real strange name, Pueria Morifica, P-U-E-R.
Wait a minute, let me get my pen. I want to write this down. I'm learning, too. I love to learn. I'm a sponge. Okay, what is it?
P-U-E-R-I-A,
uh-huh.
And then Morifica, M-I-R-I-F-I-C-A, Pueria Morifica. And it's sold in all the stores under the name of HRT, which does not mean hormone replacement therapy. It means herbal remedy from Thailand, HRT.
HRT. And what is it for? Is it for menopause or for just for women or for men, too?
Oh, no. It's mostly for the ladies. Men could use it, but we don't get hot flashes too terribly much.
Okay.
Yeah, now if you got yours from rhubarb, I'd ask, you might think of one other thing, ma'am, and that is that, sure, menopause is natural, it's totally natural, and while we're at it, being dead's natural too, sooner or later. But what's not natural is the enormous increase, as you know, in Alzheimer's in our century, the enormous increase in cardiovascular disease. I should have said it in the 20th century and the 21st centuries. The enormous increase in cardiovascular disease and the big deal increase in osteoporosis. Those were not seen hardly ever in the 1800s, and they only started reaching a peak about the 1960s. And it turns out that there is ironclad proof, and you'll find all the references if you want to in the book that I did with Dr. Leonard, that for ladies, bioidentical estrogens, and for men, bioidentical testosterone cuts the risk of Alzheimer's dramatically. It cuts it by about 80 to 90%, and it cuts the risk of cardiovascular disease by, again, a whole big bunch, not 80 to 90%, by a bunch, and it cuts the risk of osteoporosis. So, if
and
we
is
could
that
all move...
this Puria Mirifica?
No. For that, you have to work with a doctor, and you get a prescription, you go to a compounding pharmacy.
Okay.
They use the very same molecules that were in your body when you were 33 or 34, and it's a complex of them, the estrogens and the progesterone, the same timing, the same molecules, the same everything as the body did. They do have to be rubbed in. They shouldn't be swallowed because the liver messes them up, or they mess up the liver too.
Mm-hmm.
But that has so much potential. And then the other big deal, and I'll shut up again after this, is that it slows the appearance of aging quite dramatically. My wife, she's quite the thrifty lady, and, well, she's 72. I was asking her, make her prove that she's over 65 when
wow.
she asked for the senior citizen discount.
Now, is this that Wow Yam product, or what is it?
No. The starting material is either in soybeans or yams, but it's changed chemically. It is true. There's a chemical process. It's changed chemically, but it comes out the other end being totally identical to human hormones.
Is there a name for it?
The estrogen combination is called BIEST, B-I-E-S-T, for two estrogens. Those are the two major estrogens which turn into all the rest of them.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's progesterone, and there's DHEA. But you'll find all this in that book if you happen to see it, the Stay Young and Sexy with Bioidentical Hormones book.
That's not the one that Jay Mead did, Young and Sexy, Sane and Sexy, or something like that, is it?
No, that's one I did with a Dr. Lane Leonard.
Okay.
And okay. Suzanne Somers was nice enough to write the foreword.
Oh, good deal. Good deal. Okay, it's, you want to take a few minutes and tell us again where to find you? In case some people want to get your book or call you or come see you.
Stuff like that, huh?
Important stuff.
Our website is named after our clinic, which is Tahoma, T-A-H-O-M-A, clinic, and that's the Native American name for Mount Rainier out here. So Tahoma, T-A-H-O-M-A, clinic.com, and you run it all together as usual and put the W's in the front. And, of course, on the website is the phone number. And quite a lot of other information, such as click here if you want to see some samples of my newsletter. I do a newsletter that reaches about 120,000 folks a month, the publisher tells me. Also happen to have a radio program. Now, these days, all the radio stations there are stream things online. So if a person wants to listen to it, even though it's a Seattle station, they can. It's 570 AM, call letters KVI, and it's on Saturdays. Noon to 2 Pacific time, of course. So there's the radio, there's the newsletter, there's the website, ma'am. Thank you.
It's been my pleasure. Please feel free to call me Eva.
Okay,
once
Eva,
I get,
I'm sorry.
Once I get somebody on my show, like it or not, you're my friend forever. You're my friend forever because I call us a tribe, all those people of alternative medicine. We got to stick together.
Yeah, you're about right about that.
Thank you so much for coming on my show, and if you would like to come on again when you get your next book out, please keep my number and or my email and let me know. I'd love to have you.
Okay, I'll tell Carrie that. She's the lady who helped to arrange this.
Yeah, she was great. Thank you. And have a good night, and thanks for having the nerve to go out on the edge like you do and do what you do, because I know that it's hard.
Not having the nerve, ma'am, it's what we all went to medical school for, I hope, and that's to get people better and to help them not get sick in the first place. That's the goal.
Yeah, but that's not what everybody does. You know that.
I know.
Well, thank you, and have a good evening.
And thank you for helping to get the word out.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night now.